Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here for the second hour of the Outdoors and Radio Show. We're going to switch it up a little bit. We're going to talk about Maryland shellfish. We're going to talk with Mike Naylor, the Assistant Director of the Fisheries Service Shellfish Program. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Alan.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Months with an R in them, huh?
Months with an R. That's what it's always been that way, hasn't it?
It pretty much has been, exactly. But it's not for September's not one of those months anymore. And
right.
the reason is why oyster season kicks in on October 1st is pretty much one thing, and that is.
Well, I would argue it's a combination of.
Okay, a combination. Make that argument.
A combination of the the fact that oysters reproduce in the summertime in Maryland, and that makes their meat quality sometimes fairly poor.
Okay.
Anyone who's ever had summer oysters has occasionally come across one that
yuck.
Is kind of watery looking. It doesn't look very good.
Right.
And you don't want to eat that. You're better off waiting until the fall.
Right.
When they've started to fatten up a little bit.
Right.
The other reason is, of course, handling, seafood handling.
When right.
Bring those oysters on board in the summer. If they sit in the hot sun.
Exactly.
Start to cook, bacteria will begin to build up in them to the point where they can be unsafe.
Yep. Well, my main key was water temperature.
Water and air temperature, both.
Both. Water and air temperature. Absolutely. Well, anyway, here we are, October 1st, beginning of Maryland oyster season. And last year we had a dramatic increase in our oyster production here in Maryland.
It was awesome. it was awesome. We went from slightly over 100,000 bushels of oysters harvested to over 340,000 bushels.
340.
Nearly tripled our oyster harvest.
Wow. What do you attribute the major increase, Mike?
That can be directly attributed to a very good spat set that we had in the year 2010.
Okay.
And to the subsequent good survival of those oysters. We really didn't lose many oysters to disease between 2010 and 2012. So we're eating the results of that good spat set last season, and this season again we will.
Okay. Now, explain to our listeners briefly the cycle of life for an oyster and how they go from A to B to our table.
Sure. Oysters are passive spawners. The female oysters put eggs directly into the water, and the male oysters put sperm directly into the water, and they have to meet by chance in the water, and that's very dependent on a lot of environmental factors. So when those eggs and sperm meet, the egg becomes fertilized and becomes a free-swimming larvae. And that larvae can move around a little bit and is pulled around by tides and currents and will then settle somewhere else and begin life as a spat, an oyster spat. And that spat then is dependent also upon the water quality conditions to survive and grow. And it can, over the course of about three growing seasons, about 2.5 years, it can become an oyster that's big enough for you or I to eat.
Okay. So, very simple lifestyle these oysters lead.
Yeah, they glue themselves to a rock and they're stuck there forever.
Pretty much until somebody comes along and tongs them up or dredges them up, right?
That's right.
All right.
Or that they die of disease or
now,
one of the very many predators that like to eat them.
Exactly. Which includes, I do believe, not only man, but there are several other species that like to eat oysters. And do you care to share some of those?
Cownose ray is a perfect example. They're a vicious predator of young oysters and clams. They're designed with the mouth on the bottom to go around and vacuum them up and grind them up and eat them. Big plates for teeth inside of them that's specifically designed to crush shellfish shells. So that's a perfect example. And on a smaller scale, there are all sorts of small worms and drills and things that do nothing but eat oysters.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you saw the photos from the, I believe it's the Virginia Marine, whatever it is, that has the photos of the oysters, or of the cownose rays eating the oysters in the aquarium. Have you seen those photos?
Seen those. I have not.
It's amazing. The mouth is open, the gills are flared, and, you know, it's pretty cool. We published one of them in the Maryland Loves Crabs magazine, and we talked a little bit about the cow-nose rays. And not only are they the bane of oystermen, they're also the bane of Maryland crabbers. And, you know, it seems to be, you say, what's the problem or what's one of the problems to the commercial guys? And all of them point to doubleheads, you know, for the most part. One of the problems, of course, but... Yeah. You know, as far as the predatory nature of the cow nose ray, and we're not trying to castigate the rays, but it just seems to be that there's so much of an issue with them in our waters here in Chesapeake Bay. However, we're talking about oysters. So we had a great spat set. You talked about diseases. There are two diseases primarily that affect oysters here, among the other than the predators, and one is MSX, and the other one is Dermo. Am I correct in that?
That's exactly right.
All right. Are oysters more resistant now than they have been? I mean, we know these diseases are endemic in the Chesapeake Bay. How have our oysters been able to avoid them?
Well, they haven't. They certainly haven't. You know, we have Dermo disease in particular on all of our oyster bars.
Okay.
There are no bars that don't have them. It is, as we say, cosmopolitan in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
However, over about the last decade, we have been losing far fewer oysters to Dermo disease.
Okay.
We don't have scientific evidence that there is actual disease resistance in Maryland right now, but it has been proven in Virginia that they have now disease-resistant wild oysters.
Okay.
We expect that that will happen over time in Maryland also, but, you know, I'm not comfortable saying that that's actually happened, although we have... some hints that maybe it's beginning.
Some anecdotal evidence or some anecdotal stories, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, just in looking, we go out there every year, you know, since 1939, the fall survey has gone out and sampled oysters, and we take a number of those oysters to the Cooperative Oxford Lab
right.
every year, and they look and they can measure directly how much Dermo, how bad the Dermo is in the oysters, and they're seeing really encouraging signs.
I mean, several years ago, the whole herd was almost wiped out.
Yeah, we had a period in the mid-'80s where we were losing 80 or 90% of our oysters year after year after year.
Now,
that was the main driver of that's the main reason why we had our wild shellfish harvest decline so rapidly in the 80s, from millions of bushels a year to just hundreds of thousands of bushels.
Right.
And now, never quite recovered from that.
Not yet, not with 340,000, even though that's triple what it's been for the last few years. And we see that that's... We greet that news as you know, tremendous news for the not only for the industry but for the Bay as well, because I was reading something last week where might have been the press release about the oysters that they're finding that the oysters can filter the nutrient pollution out. Had you read that?
I have.
But the question is, where does it go?
Denitrification is where a lot of it goes. It becomes a gas.
Okay.
That leaves the water in as air.
Okay.
It drips off.
Yeah.
It also becomes sequestered in the tissues of the oysters that get passed along to other organisms and removed from the water column where it can become harmful algae blooms.
Yeah, but what if we eat that?
Then it goes back into the system eventually through our septic system.
No, I mean but there's no ill effect to humans.
No, well, no, not from the nitrogen and the phosphorus. No,
that's what I'm talking about, the nitrogen and the phosphorus. I mean, that's what they've been pointing to for decades is the nitrogen and phosphorus and you know, the algae blooms that coat the SAVs and then reduce photosynthesis and causes the SAVs to die, which, you know, deoxygenates the bay. I mean, the whole drill.
Yeah, that, you're exactly right.
And the nitrogen and the phosphorus have no ill effects, even sequestered in the tissue of an oyster, when we eat that. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's part of what makes them nutritious.
Well, good. I'm just going to go out and top off my coffee with a little laundry detergent, and everything will be good. Or some fertilizer for on the yard.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. That's the difficult thing to explain to people, that the same things that you put on your plants in the garden that makes them good once it gets in the bay water, becomes something that isn't good. And that's not always an easy story to tell.
It isn't. And we encapsulated it there. But basically what happens is the nutrients feed the algae. That causes the algae to increase. The algae then settles on the aquatic grasses and blocks the sunlight from penetrating the green part of the grasses, which cuts down on photosynthesis, which is how plants eat, which then kills the plants, which then decay and reduce the oxygen levels and all that. I'm close, I think, right?
You're exactly right. And it also, the nutrients floating freely in the water are consumed by algae, by phytoplankton.
Right.
And make the water less clear. Any of your readers listeners who spend time on the water in the summer will see it. You'll go out.
Oh, sure.
The water will be red or it'll be a funny green. And that's the result of those nutrients in the water being eaten by algae.
Right. Gotcha.
And then that algae dies and decomposes and goes down and settles down to the bottom of the bay through a process called eutrophication. It causes dissolved oxygen levels to drop and resulting in very poor fishing in deep waters that we tend to have in the summers now.
Well, we call them dead zones, or some people call them dead zones. Some people call them red tides. You know, there's a number of names for them. And how does all that affect then the oyster population as well?
Well, the oysters, as we discussed earlier, being stuck on the bottom like that, they have no way to escape.
They can't get out of the way. Right.
They're done.
Yeah.
So if you get low DO for too long down at the bottom, you lose your oyster bars. And we've lost most of our deep water oyster bars in the Chesapeake Bay already.
Okay. However, there is some redemption. We have an aquaculture industry here in Maryland that's growing by leaps and bounds. And we're going to take a short break here in a little bit, but I'd like you to talk about that when we come back from our break and tell us that entire process. I want to know how a person is able to engage in that business and what it requires as far as, you know, the bottom structure and what they need to do. Can we get into that a little bit?
Absolutely.
All right. That sounds like a plan. Very good. First, I'd like to tell our listeners, however, about Clyde's Sports Shop. Clyde's is located just off Beltway Exit 9 at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, and their website is clydessports.com. They have everything you could need, want, or imagine for fishing and hunting. They have all the great Browning firearms. With hunting season here, you know, we're in duck season, we're in muzzleloader season. Well, let's talk a little bit about their muzzleloaders. They carry the Thompson Center line of firearms and muzzleloaders. Great Thompson Center firearms like the Triumph, the new, I think it's called the FX. They've got them all. The Encore, they've got the high-powered rifles from Thompson Center, and they are loaded up. They've got plenty for you. If that's the firearm that you of choice that you like, well, that's good for you. They also carry a full line of Browning shotguns and firearms, rifles, pistols, the whole thing. The primary one at this point being the A5. The A5 is well-known as a waterfowl slayer here in Maryland for years and years and years. It went out of production, and now the A5 is back. The old humpback is back. It looks like the old model. It shoots better. It has a 100,000-rounder five-year guarantee. Don't forget the BPS pump, then the Maxxis autoloader, the gold light 10-gauge, and if you're a shooting sports, the 725 Satori Sporting Clays gun or the BT-99 trap gun. And for you deer hunters, for the rifle counties out in Dorchester or Upper Shore or Western Maryland, you've got the X-Bolt, extremely accurate bolt action, big game hunting perfection in all standard and Magnum and short Magnum calibers. That's Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. Just give them a call at 410-242-6108 or stop in. They've been around since 1957. They have complete gunsmithing services, too. Clyde Sports Shop. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and last longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, with a Linex spray-on bedliner. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto. Hunters, you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. By donating your doe, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org.
Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't stop a foul and you can't make a run, but when them old boys raise on shotgun, we say grace, we say man, and you ain't in the back, don't give a damn. We're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
All right, bring it. Okay, we're with Mike Naylor, the Assistant Director of the Fisheries Service Shellfish Program. We're talking about the a little bit about oysters here in Maryland. We talked about the lifestyle, and we talked about the season that we had last year, and it looks like it's off to a good start this year, right?
All indications are that it'll be pretty similar to what we had last year.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I know the governor had an announcement about the amount of spat that had been set on the bars, but tell us a little bit about the aquaculture industry, how it started and what it takes to get into that business and the leasing of the bars and everything else. And I'm just going to let you talk because I don't know that much about it.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting story that starts back in the 1800s when the first lease was issued in Maryland. And, you know, since that time, there has been somewhat of a battle between the people who would like to get a lease to grow oysters, sort of like a farmer grows crops where they're planting something and they're actively managing, between that group of people and between Maryland's wild oyster harvesters and watermen in general who see that as a potential threat to their way of life. And this has battled its way out in the courts over time, to the point where up until 2010, it was no longer possible to even apply for a lease on Maryland's eastern shore. You couldn't if you wanted to. It wasn't legal. That was changed in 2010. You can now apply for a lease to grow oysters on non-productive oyster bottom. And since that time, we've had about 200 people apply to begin to grow oysters on over 4,000 acres of Maryland's part of the Chesapeake Bay. It's really exciting to see. This is about a $100 million annual business on the east coast of the United States, and it's something that Maryland's largely missed out on. Virginia developed a $30 million annual aquaculture industry while we sat still. And since 2010, we've been working really hard to try to catch up. And interestingly, watermen are some of the ones who are the most taking advantage of this. They are applying for leases by the dozens, and roughly half of our applications have come from watermen who are looking to diversify the ways that they can get an income from the water. And this can be just another piece of how they're able to make a living.
I don't know if you remember back back when the rockfish season was closed, they came up with a tag program, and they came up with money for watermen and that type of thing. And I said, you know, why don't the watermen take this money and form a, you know, some type of coalition and get involved in aquaculture? And the answer I always got was that, you know, they were free spirits. They wanted to, you know, ply the bay, and, you know, that would take away from it, and, you know, some kind of lifestyle thing. But, you know, the smart ones actually did start to take advantage of some of the programs and have seen the future. And it's not all taken, the way their fathers and their grandfathers did it. You got to change, you know. And I think are starting to pay attention.
You're absolutely right. You know, and the past president of the Maryland Watermen's Association, you know, Larry Sims.
Yep, I know he passed away.
He was a really smart guy, and he applied for a lease. He was one of the first ones with a foot in the door when we opened up leases, and he saw the future, and he knew aquaculture was going to be a part of it for people like him. And Robert T. Brown, the current head of the Maryland Watermen's Association, has several leases and even has his own remote setting operation.
Sure.
So, you know, we're seeing a lot of forward-thinking watermen jump onto this again. This doesn't mean they can't pursue a lot of the same things they used to pursue in the free-spirited way. This is just another arrow in their quiver, another thing they can do.
I know Johnny and Ricky from Chesapeake Gold Oysters, you know, those are the guys that supplied the oysters to the Preakness this year. And
that's right.
They've developed the aquaculture equipment for people to buy. So they've not only jumped on the opportunity to raise wild oysters, and I know you've been there, where they raise their own algae for the spat to feed on. They set their own oysters right there. They have their own boat, and then they have the harvesting equipment and the equipment used for folks to get into that and raise their own oysters. So I thought that was, you know, their whole operation's pretty sharp.
There are quite a few people like Johnny Jolly out there doing this now, and it's really exciting to see. I mean, I'm looking forward to a day when I can go to a restaurant and be able to get oysters from 10 different farms in Maryland the way you can from farms in Massachusetts or Prince Edward Island.
Well, we actually did that at the Mermaid Kiss event at the aquarium. We had a number of the aquaculture folks there, 7 or 8 of them, if I remember right, and they were very delicious and tasty oysters, if I say so myself.
I was there, too, and I'm going to have to agree with you.
Yeah, indeed, and I'm sorry we didn't get to have a chance to chat then, but here we are today, so that's good. So we have tell us what the process is. I know you said they apply, but what is the process, I guess, is the question.
For most applicants, the process is as simple as making the drive to the Maryland Department of Natural Resources building and sitting down with some of the people who manage the program and talking to them about the first and the biggest challenge is finding a spot where you can do this. There are an awful lot of things that can prevent you from getting a lease. Too many to even mention. And, you know, so the first step is coming in and talking to us about where you can and can't do it. Then it's a simple matter of filling out some paperwork and working together with the Department of Natural Resources to submit a package that goes to the Army Corps of Engineers for review. You know, all of these leases take place in the waters that all of us love to fish and boat and hunt around. So great pains are taken to make sure that your lease doesn't interfere with the ability of other people to enjoy the water.
Right.
And that's a process that takes a lot of time. So, you know, you fill out your paperwork, you submit it, and there's some back and forth with the state and the Army Corps of Engineers. And then, you know, hopefully in 3 months to a year, you have your lease in place and you can begin growing shellfish.
Sure. Now, I hunt on a little chop tank, and there's this oyster sanctuary down a lease and sanctuary down the river from me. And the landowner tells me that, you know, the Department of the Environment is in the creek testing it all the time, and they're always finding you know, too many coliforms in there to safely raise oysters and that type of thing. And so the aquaculture owner has to take his oysters, harvest his oysters or pull his oysters, and then take them out into another part of the bay and do what they call float them. Am I correct in that? And allow that water to be filtered out of them.
Yep, it's called a relay.
Relay, okay, good.
They have to move, relay their oysters to safer waters for a very set period of time.
Right.
So the oysters can cleanse themselves before they're sold.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Yep. Okay. No one's actually calling this a recovery, though, are they?
I mean,
where we are right now, you're not at, you said, you know, hundreds of millions of bushels, and that, you know, or I don't know, if, what did you say that? Back,
well, there were millions. In
millions eight, of bushels. So. Now we're at 340,000 bushels. So we're taking strides towards bringing back our oyster population, but nobody's actually calling it a recovered fishery like the striped bass fishery has been declared a recovered fishery. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's a really interesting thing to try to explain to people. And a metaphor I like to use is, you know, picture your yard.
Right.
And you've had a terrible drought. And all of the grass in your yard died, except for the grass in the corner of your house and underneath one tree.
Right.
And that, so if you think of those grass as oysters, that patch of grass in the corner of your yard and under your tree
yeah.
is looking much better now than they did a few years ago.
Right, right. But by no means, I mean, by no means do we have the population of oysters in the bay. I mean, especially above the Bay Bridge, we know that it's just not there.
Yeah, the habitat is gone, and it is not going to come back quickly.
Right.
So the areas where we still have oyster habitat, the oysters are doing really well there.
Yeah.
Those huge areas that were lost are still lost, and they're not going to come back in a short period of time.
Exactly, exactly. Now, we're hurtling towards another break here, but a couple of years ago there was talk of introducing non-native oysters. Is that pretty much over and done with?
That's off the table now.
Yeah, off the table. Okay.
The environmental impact statement that was generated suggested that that wouldn't be a good idea.
Okay. Because it would supplant the native population? Was that the conclusion?
That was one of the biggest fears, yes.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Very good. Well, we just had this major announcement from the governor and talking about the oyster program and this Harris Creek property tends to be touted as one of the success stories. Tell us a little bit about Harris Creek.
Yeah, Harris Creek is the last tributary on the north side of the Choptank as you leave the river. It borders the east side of Tillman Island. And that is the oyster sanctuary that's been chosen as the first candidate for restoration. The Army Corps of Engineers, the Maryland DNR, NOAA, Oyster Recovery Partnership, we're all sort of teaming up to try to bring oysters back in Harris Creek. And we believe by springtime we'll have restored over 50% of the restorable bottom in Harris Creek through a combination of restoration techniques, some reef creation, some direct planting of spat on shell, and we have water quality monitoring devices out there almost year-round now to kind of keep tabs on it.
Right.
And, you know, we're really encouraged with what we've seen so far. Some of your listeners might have seen pictures that went around. They were in the newspaper there
right.
locally of all the oysters all along the shorelines
right.
throughout Harris Creek and very encouraging early signs that this is going to work.
Well, that's good. That's good. Let's hope so. Let's hold out hope for Maryland oysters. As you already said, it'll never be like it was. And the habitat in certain areas is not going to recover. We still have MSX and Dermo out there. And, you know, we're finding a little bit better reproduction than we had. Aquaculture is one of the elements that is helping our recovery, the set-aside of sanctuaries, and when we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about poaching and maybe some other challenges. What do you think, Mike?
That sounds great.
All right. Hey, Clyde Sport Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They are your Browning full-line dealer. They will take care of any need that you have for any firearm from Browning. They have the brand-new A5. That's right, the humpback, the one with the big old hump on the receiver. And the guarantee from Browning this year is 100,000 rounds or 5-year guarantee. It's got a kinematic drive system. It's a very soft-shooting, recoil-operated autoloader, and it might be just what you're looking for if you're a waterfowl hunter. Now, if you like the 10-gauge, they've got the Gold Light 10-gauge. Comes in a 3.5-inch chamber, and that is also in Mossy Oak camo available. It's got the armor coating that helps prevent rust. If you like the pump action, there's always the BPS, and it comes in 410, 28, 20, 16, 12, and 10-gauge models. 12 and 20 gauge rifled barrel deer models are also available. It's a bottom ejection pump action shotgun from Browning, also available in the DuraTouch armor coating and Mossy Oak Breakup Infinity. There's the Maxis, there's the X-Bolt big game rifle, there's the BT-99 for trap shooting, and the Satori standard now for sporting clays. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Don't forget they got the great Thompson Center muzzle loaders, and you can give them a call at 410-242-6108.
We're in the seasonal transition to some cooler temperatures here, near normal temperatures today with a lot of cloud cover around the area at 66. Showers possible this evening with clearing overnight, a low near 44. Sunshine tomorrow, 63. Dry Monday, upper 60s. Richard Wedding at the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Marcy Norton. October is the unofficial kickoff of the holiday season, which for many of us is the most expensive time of the year. But this is also a good month to find savings that could ease the pain of that holiday spending. Now's a good time to put stuff on layaway. Walmart, Kmart, Toys R Us, and Babies R Us are all offering free layaways for early shoppers. October is Energy Awareness Month, so now's a good time to find special deals on energy-saving items. Go to EnergyStar.gov and take the Energy Star Pledge. They'll email you coupons and rebate deals for everything from efficient appliances to energy-saving windows. Doctors are fully stocked with flu shots by now, and a lot of places offer free flu shots. CVS even offers a 20% off shopping pass when you get a flu shot, and you'll save by not getting sick. Candy gets marked way down right after Halloween. Get some leftover chocolate pumpkins, melt them, and you're ready for holiday baking. This is the Wall Street Journal Report.
We live in a world where entire fortunes can disappear in seconds. There is, however, one investment so safe, no investor has ever lost a dime of principal or a nickel of interest. Municipal bonds backed by the leader in bond insurance, Assured Guarantee. With a quarter century of experience and $12 billion in claims-paying resources, ask your financial advisor about Assured Guarantee for investors who embrace possibilities but invest in certainties.
If you want to work until you drop, reduce your standard of living in retirement, or lose more of your hard-earned money in the stock market, then just ignore me. But if you'd like to generate a steady, predictable income, I'm talking real wealth and financial security for as long as you live, then listen to this. A free report is now available that reveals the money-making secrets Wall Street and the banks don't want you to know. It reveals how you can get guaranteed growth, safety, and wealth-building power without risking your money in the Wall Street casino. To get your free special report, visit bankonyourself.com. That's bankonyourself.com.
Alan L. Here for Hammer Hollow Outfitters. Looking for a place to hunt for quality deer or waterfowl? Hammer Hollow Outfitters has thousands of acres spread over 9 farms on Maryland's Eastern Shore. Brian Doyle and Ken Kirchner are dedicated to your success and your safety. Hammer Hollow has proven blinds for ducks and geese, and their farms produce big bucks year after year. Your chances are good for a fair chase mature whitetail. Visit their website, hammerhollowoutfitters.com, or call 410-903-2872. Hammer Hollow Outfitters, 410-903-2872, for geese, ducks, and quality bucks.
Don't be fooled by cheap crab prices. That's bull stuff. NBS Seafood offers only Maryland live crabs, a little more expensive, but well worth it. Avoid the pre-steamed, mushy, flavorless crab scandal. Get your live Maryland crabs at NBS Seafood. Maryland watermen supply the best local crabs caught today for you to enjoy tonight. Cook your own crabs to unlock that special flavor that Maryland blues are famous for. Just 20 minutes in your steamer, so good your taste buds scream. We even have a crab spice for you. Call NBS Seafood at 410-271-3202. NBS Seafood has fresh Maryland crab meat, live Maine lobsters, live crawfish, wild-caught Gulf shrimp, and many fresh and flash frozen delights. And they shed their own soft crabs in their own tanks for the cleanest, freshest, soft crabs anywhere. NBS Seafood has a roadside stand at 1223 Dorsey Road in Glen Burnie, next to Jim Donnie's RV. Open 7 days, Monday through Friday, 2:30 to 6:30, Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 6:30. That phone number, 410-271-3202. 271-3202 for live crabs, NBS Seafood. No bull stuff sold here.
The Doe Harvest Challenge is now statewide. Deer hunters, by donating your female deer, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. Now you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, and Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
taking and giving my day by day. I dig snow and rain and bright sunshine. Taking a line.
Dragging a line, 20 feet of water, 16, 20 ounces of weight, small bucktail on the bottom, catching some really nice fish still. So, Mike, I don't know if you've been out fishing or not, but that's the latest report I heard a couple days ago.
I heard it was pretty good all summer long.
Yeah, it's been great all summer long, no question about that, that's for sure. All right, so we just read the names of a couple of fellows that were charged with poaching the other day in these oyster sanctuaries on the Patuxent. And apparently... There's no X marks the spot, but these guys all have GPS on their boats and they all know, you know, where the line is and they know where the sanctuaries are and that type of thing. Whose oysters are they stealing?
Well, in that case, you're in my oysters, everyone's oysters. You know, we're all, you know, a lot of public tax dollars go to the hatchery to help bring oysters back in Chesapeake Bay. So I would argue that they're stealing from everyone.
Okay. Now since you said that, what's the price tag? What's the tab so far on the oyster? We won't call it a recovery, but on the oyster project.
Well, you know, there's lots of different ways to measure it. It's certainly in
well. You brought in Corps of Engineers. You brought in NOAA. You brought in Harris Creek and all the, you know, everything that's going into that project. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of work here to bring back these oysters. So, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no. It's the Harris Creek effort alone is going to be more than $20 million.
Okay.
When you add what the Army Corps has done and what we're doing.
Okay, and that's all taxpayer money, not necessarily Maryland taxpayer money, but. You know, taxpayer money involved with the federal programs as well, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, at the end of the day, whatever amount of money it is, whether it's $100 million or $200 million, and we get to a certain point with our oyster industry here, the question I have to ask you is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah, that's a question we all have to ask ourselves about everything we do. You know, I hear that a lot.
I know. I bet you
do.
It's
worth it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's often difficult to put a dollar number on things like the acres of forests you have in the state or the acres of oyster reefs or anything else.
Sure.
There are value judgments that you have to make. And all I can tell you is for myself as manager of the shellfish program, you know, I'm trying as hard as I can to bring oysters back to
sure
like that well, once were.
Go ahead. I'm
so
sorry.
My kids will have a better situation in the bay than I did, you know, when I was growing up.
Sure. Well, when you look at the benefit of, you know, the an increased oyster population with all the things that we mentioned earlier, the water quality, the reduction of the nutrients and things like that, the juice could very well be worth the squeeze.
I certainly think so. And when you look at the amount of money being spent on projects like this in the context of the entire state and federal budget, quickly discover that we're working on the margins. We're not a big spender relative to all the other things we use our, you know, that our tax money gets used for. And I would argue most people would probably think this is a pretty good investment compared to a lot of other things.
Okay. That being said, now we were talking about poaching. You know, this has been a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, actually a little bit more than a pet peeve of mine. We've taken all our natural resources, police resources, and dumped them into, you know, flying over the oyster sanctuaries and, you know, mass patrols on the water. In the meantime, we've got the early muzzleloader deer season out there being and the early duck season all going on this week. And the question I'm wondering is, are we robbing Peter to pay Paul? And that's not an oyster question. It's just a thing that I need to bring up for my listeners. And you don't even have to answer or address it. But as far as the oyster part of that, you know, we see that even the press releases from the NRP says we're going to enhance our patrols in the air. We're going to enhance our patrols on the water. And, you know, they're putting intense pressure on these guys. And as I said earlier, you know, how do they know where the line is? I mean, are these all marked by GPS readings, and the watermen are all aware of where all the sanctuaries are?
Every year, every waterman goes to one of Maryland's service centers, and there are quite a few of them scattered around the state, and they sign an affidavit and receive about a three-quarter inch thick book that is filled with maps that show all of the oyster sanctuaries. They show where all of the buoys are. Most of these oyster sanctuaries are delineated by physical buoys in the water.
Okay.
When you get there, you see a marker. I mean, many of your fishermen, I'm sure, are
right.
See these, and then it'll say a shellfish protection area or
right.
a variety of things.
So, there's it's no secret.
It's no secret. They know where the areas are. And if you read the story about the Patuxent guy, he stayed out of the area while there was another boat nearby.
Yeah, I
saw that. That boat left. There he drifted onto it. And
right in there.
Yeah. Everyone on the shore was watching him.
Yeah, exactly. So, yep, I heard that. So, yeah, okay. Well, that kind of answers that question a little bit. Tell us about the Maryland Grow Oyster Program. What is that all about?
So the Chesapeake Bay Foundation long ago started a program where they had citizen oyster growers who
right.
took care of oysters in cages on their docks.
And right.
It's a really interesting way to engage the public in a restoration program that's very easy for them to do. Anybody can do it of any age.
Right.
And we've somewhat adopted that program in the state of Maryland and tried to make it a little easier for more people to do it than had been able to do it previously. And we now have it in just about every major river in the state where people get oysters when they're not even visible. They put them out at the end of their dock and they grow them for a period of several months and then they're planted on the sanctuary. It's a really interesting program that's growing incredibly rapidly.
So any person who lives on the water can get involved in that.
That's right.
And that's the key word there. If you want to do a search on the online, you can go to Marylanders Grow Oysters program, and it'll take you right to the link on the website. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, good.
That's right. It's something about watching things grow. You know, whether it's oysters or plants or something in your garden that really.
Yeah,
what grabs hold of people and makes them interested.
Exactly. What color thumb do you have to have? I mean, I'm not sure. I know it's a green thumb for the garden. I'm not sure what it is for oysters, but we'll think about that one. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And when we come back, we want to talk about some concerns that people might have as far as eating shellfish, in particular raw oysters and some of the things that are associated with that. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And we want to encourage people to eat as many oysters as possible and eat our bounty out of the bay here in Maryland. But there are a couple things we need to note, right?
Yep.
All right. We'll be right back after this. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and last longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you.
Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Buck Bomb introduces new products that will attract deer and improve your odds. The new Ambush all-season deer scent comes in a larger can that gives you 33% more Buck Bomb for the same low price. Use it on every hunt. The Cornholer is a corn-based attractant that screws into the ground. Deer have to paw and gnaw to get it. That brings them back time after time. Now, Pathfinder is an invisible spray, except for your flashlight, that you spray on trees to mark your trail into your stand. You can't see it in the daylight, so no one else can find your favorite spot except you. It lasts for months until it slowly fades away. And fishermen, you can try the new Fish Bomb Menhaden Quick Slick from the makers of Buck Bomb. Visit your local Buck Bomb retailer or order online at buckbomb.com or call 1-866-850-6653. The Buck Bomb blows away traditional scent products. Hunt smart. Increase your odds with the Buck Bomb. If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, we're back. I just wanted to mention NBS Seafood. They're pretty much done with the soft crabs, although we haven't changed the commercial yet. We will. The number 410-271-3202. They do carry Chincoteague and local oysters there now at NBS Seafood, and they're located on Dorsey Road, right down there in Glen Burnie, so you can check them out. Mike Naylor with us from the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, the Assistant Director of the Fishery Service Shellfish Program. Mike, we want to talk just a little bit about some of the things that can happen to you if, well, let's say certain individuals, people with diabetes, people with liver problems, people with immune systems that are compromised a little bit, probably would be better off not eating raw oysters. Am I right?
Oh, I would go way beyond that. I would say they're absolutely out of their mind if they even think about touching a raw oyster.
That's pretty serious. Okay.
Yeah, it's very serious. Those infections are fatal in people whose immune systems are compromised.
Now you're talking about. A safety issue. One of the ones that comes to mind is an organism called a bacteria called Vibrio. Is that right?
That's right. We have two kinds of Vibrio. We have Vibrio vulnificus and Vibrio parahemolyticus. Vibrio vulnificus is very common.
Go ahead and say that three times real fast.
Yeah, it's a really common thing.
Can you say A and B?
Well, we call it VV and VP. The VV is a vulnificus, and that's the one. I'm sure we all know someone who was crabbing and they got a cut on their arm.
Right.
They developed an infection that became very significant.
Okay.
People lose limbs over this.
And this, okay.
That same Vibrio bacteria exists within raw shellfish because the shellfish pass the same water through their tissues. And if you have any immune system problems and you eat that, you know, that is the same thing that will cause an upset stomach for several days in a healthy human will kill someone who doesn't have a healthy immune system.
And I've heard of that. So we just want to make sure that the folks that are forewarned is to be forearmed. If you are suffering any kind of liver problem, any kind of immune disease, even diabetes, you want to just make sure that those oysters are cooked. And what's your favorite recipe for oysters, Mike? Do you eat them?
I love oysters. My favorite recipe for oysters is you need one oyster and one shucking knife.
Okay.
I eat an awful lot of oysters. I buy them by the bushel, personally, and you know I'll eat them over the period of a week or two, keeping them in the fridge in between.
Yeah.
And I love to eat them raw with a mignonette with a vinegar sauce.
Vinegar sauce
sprinkled on top. Yeah, ooh. That's really common in the Deep South. Not so common here.
Right. Exactly.
That's my favorite way. Or broiled. You know, I I have a good friend who lives on the shore, Dave Seacott, and he and I spent many times.
Are you Dave's friend? Are you a friend of Dave's?
I'm a very good friend of Dave's. And
no kidding.
Yeah, we would gather oysters in front of the duck blind, you know, before.
Yeah, I know. I hunt that blind.
Yeah.
I hunt with Dave. That's wonderful. Well, hey, we're going to get together for duck hunt.
And he would take them in and boil them.
Oh, I know.
In his mom's oven, and I have some wonderful memories of doing that. That's still one of my favorite ways to eat oysters.
Exactly. All right. Well, we're going to have to get together with Dave and kill some canvasbacks and eat some oysters this year.
That sounds great.
You good with that?
That sounds great.
Let's do that. That sounds like a plan. Yes, indeed. So, all right. Well, Mike, we're quickly running out of time. Any concluding remarks that you'd like to make?
I would just like to say that, you know, a lot of what we read about oysters has been doom and gloom, really, since I was a kid growing up in Maryland. And I think everyone should be encouraged by some of the things that we're seeing and some of the additional attention that's being put towards trying to restore oysters. And I'm sure we all share the hope that our future generations will have it better than we did.
So do I. Absolutely. So, well, we appreciate you joining us this morning here, Mike, on the Outdoorsman Radio Show. And we look forward to getting together with you. Maybe we can actually get together and do that duck hunt. That sounds like a game plan to me.
Well, thank you very much, Alan, for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listener.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much. And again, oysters not recovered, knocking on the door of better days ahead, though.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. There goes Mike Naylor, Maryland Shellfish Program. I want to have a couple notes here to tell you if you want to get in the muzzleloader contest. You can do that anytime, today, tomorrow, throughout the week. Ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, standard email address. That's my last name, Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, at ellisoutdoors.com. That's outdoors with an S. Ellisoutdoors.com is the overall umbrella for Ellis Outdoors LLC. You can go on there and listen to the podcast of the Outdoors and Radio Show that you're listening to right now. You can link to Maryland Hunting Quarterly, the magazine we publish, or Maryland Loves Crabs, the annual magazine that we publish. And you can read a little bit about me if you like, and we'll go from there. The folks that have called in today, of course, are in the muzzleloader contest. We'll finish that up next week and draw the muzzleloader next week. And we'll be good to go. So, you know, be prepared to call in next week if you want to get in the muzzleloader contest to win a muzzleloader. We can do that. Or you can go on Facebook, The Outdoorsman Radio Show, and check in with Facebook. You can like us. You can make a comment. And we appreciate all your support. Thank you very much, and have a great weekend. Now get out, and stay safe.
Hunters, you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region.